Oh, yes, it's the Qualcomm Podcast. I'm PJ, and thanks for listening. Qualcomm makes some of the best technology on the planet. I'm going to bring you interviews with the experts and the inventors here so you can understand how the technology works and find out what's coming next.
Welcome to the Qualcomm Podcast. I'm Jason Woodmansey. I'm sitting in for PJ today. On this episode, we're going to talk about Qualcomm Ventures and how Qualcomm supports women in technology. Joining me today on the podcast are Susie Armstrong, who's the SVP of Engineering here at Qualcomm, Varsha Tagare, who's the Managing Director of Qualcomm Ventures, and Sarah Daniels, who's the CEO and co-founder of Blue Canoe. So people pretty much know that Qualcomm is a chip manufacturer. They may know that we also invent a lot of key technologies around 5G and have a lot of patents in those space. They may even know that we do things outside of mobile and IoT, automotive, things like that. But they may not know that Qualcomm's also an investor. So, Varsha, maybe you can give us a little bit of background on Qualcomm Ventures, what it does, how long it's been around, what kinds of investments you've made, and maybe give a little bit of background on what Qualcomm Ventures is.
Thank you, and thank you for hosting this podcast. Qualcomm Ventures is an investment arm of Qualcomm, the broader mothership that everybody knows about. And we've been investing in mobile and wireless innovation for 20 years. That dates back to year 2000. As a corporate venture capital fund, we have a global footprint, so that makes us diverse naturally. We are operating in seven geographies, established geographies like US and China. And then we also have presence in Latin America, Europe, Israel, India, and Korea. Our team is diverse as we come from different continents, and it's also diverse in terms of setup. We focus on investing in areas where Qualcomm has demonstrated expertise. For example, artificial intelligence, IoT, mobile core, as well as auto and AR and VR. We've been very fortunate to have been associated with companies like Zoom, Ring, Xiaomi, and 99taxis, who have gone out there and created new models for the modern world.
That was going to be my next question, was some of the companies that we may have heard of. So you said Ring, Zoom.
Zoom, that now makes traveling unnecessary. You can see the face very nicely around the globe where you're calling in from the laptop or the phone.
I used one of those conferences today with a vendor. So
very glad to hear.
Why was Qualcomm Ventures founded in the first place? What was the kind of the impetus behind it?
You know, Qualcomm believes a lot in innovation. We focus only on mobile. And we want to help change ways people live, work, or operate around the globe. And hence the motivation to start an investment arm.
And how do we help these companies once we've invested in them?
That's a great question. Qualcomm is a great company in terms of collaboration with our partners. Qualcomm Ventures' presence in seven countries helps these companies go around the globe. So we can take a company from China or India and help them get a presence established in any part of the world. Qualcomm Corporate is very generous with their support of executive time as well as business development and R&D time in terms of either incorporating technology where it makes sense or go-to-market initiatives. Xiaomi is a great example of that. We have companies like Particle, which has done the same kind of work in IoT. We have another company called AnyVision that has benefited a lot from our AI efforts.
And so Xiaomi is another example of a company that we've invested in that's kind of certainly grown a lot over the years.
And enabled a completely different business model.
So we want to talk a little bit about the Female Founders event that Qualcomm Ventures recently hosted. So how did that come about? And what was the reasons for starting an event like the Female Founders event?
It was a brainchild of our marketing head, Marianne. She is very passionate about this, and she pulled together this event. Our goal was the following. We said educators have tried, boys-only, girls-only education system till 12th grade. But after that, we go into a co-ed education and into a co-ed workforce. We wanted to try a similar model. Once you become an entrepreneur, give you a platform where you compete very fiercely with your peer group, similar to a same-sex school. Here is your platform to compete with female entrepreneurs from around the world. We specifically focused on technology, and we found that there are very few female founders in the technology areas that we care about.
So it's the numbers are low, and this is the idea is that with an event like this, you can increase the numbers and kind of bring more female founders into kind of into this environment.
That's right. And, you know, it also gives two very key elements of success to these CEOs. We expose our network of investors, entrepreneurs, so they get easy access, which would have otherwise taken them lots of LinkedIn requests and knocking on the doors. So you got that. Whether you got the prize or not, you got access to this huge network. And second, it also accelerated their access to capital, because now you have a competition, and if you happen to win it, you get a $500,000 check.
So Varsha, how did the competition work? How did you pick the companies, and how did you narrow them down into the to the finalists and to the winner?
You know, we used a lot of different methods to source companies for this competition. We used a combination of primary research as well as our vast network of people that we know around the world. We selected companies that were working in areas that were relevant to Qualcomm. That was really the main focus area. Now, all of these participants are US-based companies. They have a few criteria. They should have at least one female founder. They should have some evidence of market traction and no more than $3.2 million in funding at the time they apply. So if they fitted in these criteria, they were eligible to apply for the competition.
How many different companies participated in the competition?
We had many companies that applied to the event. We finally selected 10. And these 10 female CEOs came from many different walks of life for mobile, but it's still focused on technology. Each company, not just the winner, all 10 of them get a two-minute pitch on stage. And this is full audience, you know, so they get an elevator pitch experience of 2 minutes. And this was the maximum exposure these companies could have really asked for. We followed that up with the winner announcements. And this was done by Michelle, who is our EVP of HR, and Quinn, who is our global head of Qualcomm Ventures. Okay. And then we all hung out in San Francisco, and people got to meet other investors, other entrepreneurs, as well as fellow entrepreneurs, and catch up and deepen their network in a very informal setting.
And so who attended the summit itself?
The summit was very widely attended. So we had executives from Qualcomm, Susie and Michelle, along with Brian and Quinn. They all attended the event. We had entrepreneurs that were not competing in the event. And then we had venture capitalists who came in, early stage investors as well as mid stage investors from around the world, actually.
So is the idea that they would see these companies and maybe even if they didn't win, they might want to jump in on some of these 10 companies that were featured in the event?
Absolutely. You know, your winner may not be the same as the winner that applies for Susie. And so we said, pick your own. If it's not the first one that we pick, you get access to the other 9.
Okay. So Susie, you gave the keynote at this event, right?
Yes.
And so why was it important from your perspective to take part in this event?
Well, it was sort of threefold for me. I was thrilled to be invited to take part of it in it and give the keynote. So for the company, we, as a very innovative company, we consider supporting women entrepreneurs as additive. You know, it's not only a good thing to do, but it's also an economic imperative. As we launch technologies like 5G that increasingly enables these technologies like artificial intelligence and IoT, we need these innovative new ideas and businesses to build on top of these platforms to build this ecosystem. For the industry, I heard a very interesting and very sad, but it also makes me mad, statistics that I'm going to quote. The World Economic Forum reports that it will be, at the rate we're going, it will be 208 years before we make gender equity. And I want to do whatever I can and whatever the company can and whatever the industry can to pull that in, because I don't think I'm going to make it 208 years.
Unless maybe one of these female founders come up with something that'll help help you live longer until you actually make it.
I love that. and then for me personally, I've been very involved in, especially in the last few years, in our internal STEM inclusion and diversity initiatives. And and in some of these initiatives, we work with sixth grade girls. And so to see these female founders up there in some ways represented to me sort of the full circle, you know, going from sixth graders all the way through supporting, you know, those diversity supporting them in going into these fields in college, and then these founders. I got to listen to all the long pitches. And had I actually been one of the judges, Qualcomm would have spent a lot more money because I would have given them all
a prize. We had our first prize, second prize, third prize.
No, we would have just had 10 top prizes.
Well, it's good to know that there was such good competition for the prize.
And the other thing that I was so impressed with is, I did a lot of the early work on packet data and, generations of these cellular wireless links. And the applications, if you will, and the use cases being built on top of that are just phenomenal. And, we're talking to Sarah later in this podcast. And the innovative solutions that aren't necessarily, right in what you traditionally think of wireless data applications are really amazing. And they're really things that will change the world. I also talked about how it is an economic imperative for the U.S. and for the world to pull these ideas in. It's in addition to being the right thing to do to have gender equity, because you don't get these ideas, you don't flush these ideas out unless you commit to actually supporting them financially as well.
Sarah, where are you dialing in from?
From Bellevue, Washington.
Okay. So Blue Canoe is your company. You're the CEO and co-founder. Won the competition. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Blue Canoe and what your company does?
Thank you. I'm honored to be on this podcast and really part of this whole process. So Blue Canoe is the leading AI app that helps non-native English speakers improve the clarity and confidence in their spoken English. So if you think about it, English is the global common language of the world, right? 2 billion people around the world are needing to learn to speak English. And it turns out that learning to speak it in a way that's easily understood by the rest of the world is quite challenging if you learn it after childhood. It's much, much harder to learn to speak a language and be easily understood than just to learn the vocabulary or the grammar. And for the first time, we have been able to come up with a solution that combines a proven brain-based methodology and scales it with our proprietary speech recognition and machine learning and make it into a series of mobile activities on an app, meaning that somebody all over the world, whenever they have 10 minutes on their mobile phone, can have an effective virtual AI teacher to help them improve their English. And with that, we're changing careers and we're changing lives.
So how is it different than other language apps? I've certainly tried to learn languages via apps in the past, and I know I've found that it's helped me read other languages, but then when I actually get there and try to speak to someone, it kind of all falls apart. So how is your app different than what the ones I might have used in those situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there are really a lot of good apps out there that help you with vocabulary, particularly with grammar, et cetera. It turns out that the way the human brain is created, speaking and processing language sounds is a really different part of the brain than the part of our brain that's more analytical for vocabulary. And in order to improve it, we had to create an app that, first of all, had an educational foundation that was effective. And leading edge, the best educational methodology out there for teaching English pronunciation is something called the color vowel system that Blue Canoe is honored to have the creator of that methodology running our education team. And that methodology tags different parts of the brain, the visual, the kinesthetic, the image, the music parts of the brain, and gets them involved. And so we were able to build mobile activities that as a user, as you're doing these activities and maybe you're reading something, you are using the microphone on your phone and you're speaking into the phone. And the phone then, with our speech recognition and our machine learning, is instantly analyzing what you said. And instead of the way an Alexa, for example, or Google Translate would try to guess what you said and then figure out what you meant, we're doing the opposite. We already know what you tried to say, and now we're going to analyze what you said and how you said it, and then give you targeted information on what you said wrong. So, for example, we might say that you put the stress on the second syllable of that word when you should have put the stress on the first syllable. That would be called targeted feedback. Or we might say that the vowel sound that you used was a red vowel sound, what we call a red vowel sound, but it should have been a blue vowel sound. And we give targeted feedback that then lets you understand with different parts of your brain what you did wrong and how to correct it. And we have been proven to be effective, which is really miraculous.
So is it just for English, or is it for, are you looking at doing other languages as well?
I love that question. And actually, one of the judges asked me that same question during the competition. I would love to be able to do it for all languages eventually, but the economics are the following. Around the world, people spend about $50 billion a year on language learning, any language. And this is governments, this is schools, this is private individuals. It's estimated about a $50 billion business to learn languages. $40 billion of it is spent learning English.
So you're going to concentrate on that market first before you get to before you get to the rest.
That is clearly what we're going to do. There is a lot of work to be done in that market, and that's where we're focused.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So what was it like participating in the competition? Was it nerve-wracking? Was it exciting? Was it thrilling? Was it how did it make you feel?
You know, I'm going to go with exciting. It was a very, very well-run organization, a well-run event. I got the opportunity to meet lots of interesting people, both meeting the other very impressive women founders. That was fun. Meeting folks in the audience, meeting other investors, all of that. And I remember at one point thinking, you know, even if I've just met all of these folks, I will take something away that was a positive from building up my network. And so that part was fun. And then in terms of talking about Blue Canoe, I must say I love talking about Blue Canoe. What we are doing is amazing. We are literally helping people, and every day we're getting emails from people from around the world about how we have improved their careers and changed their lives. And that's super exciting. And so I never get tired of talking about Blue Canoe. And so getting the opportunity to pitch Blue Canoe and tell our story was pretty fun.
So did you end up getting a giant size check to hold up for the event?
Oh, absolutely.
So where do you keep that? I've always wondered what happens with those giant checks. Do you have a spot for it, or is it something you mount on the wall?
Well, actually, if I had one thing to do over, I would have probably figured out, worked harder how to bring that huge check home. In fact, my kids, I have two teenage boys, they were both very disappointed in me that I didn't bring the check home. But it was a huge, huge check, and I had, you know, the event was in San Francisco, and I live in outside of Seattle, and it just seemed too hard to bring it home. So we left.
Probably not something you could fit in your carry-on.
It would not have fit in the carry-on, but we have some great photos of the very, very big check. But it would have been super fun to bring it home.
So for all of you who are that were at the summit, what was your favorite part? I think, Sarah, you talked about being maybe meeting the other other contestants and other folks who were there. Susie Varsha, what was your favorite part of the event?
For me, my favorite part was listening to the quote long unquote pitches, the 8-minute pitches. I was just enraptured. I'd never taken part in anything like this. They were so well put together. They had their business cases, but even beyond all that, the use cases and their ideas were so innovative and so fresh, if you will, and new. I knew nothing about the $50 billion language market, and I had never actually thought about the fact that you could use a mobile phone with, you know, your own patented technology and your own AI technology to improve spoken language. For, you know, I'll put in my request to have the next one be Italian, because I've learned tried to learn Italian before, and it's very difficult to speak, even though I do wave my hands.
That doesn't help.
Yeah. So for me, the whole event was wonderful, and there was lots of opportunity to network and get some additional information from the participants afterwards. It was held in a gorgeous area of San Francisco. But my favorite part by far was listening to those pitches.
Varsha, how about yourself? How, from a Qualcomm Ventures perspective, and you kind of look at the event, what was your favorite part?
I think I would point out a few areas. One was the passion of the CEOs. They really believed in their business. And you, in all 10 of them, we felt that they had a strong connection to their business. And it's not just running a business for them. So that came out all throughout the pitches. The second part that was interesting was these entrepreneurs, although US-based companies, are targeting problems worldwide. So Sarah is selling in China and in Japan, in non-English speaking countries as well as in the US. We had another company trying to sell into Latin America, creating a laboratory on the phone, a completely different use case we would have never thought. Another company trying to do use the phone as a way to detect breathing pattern problems. So, you know, real life issues now that are possible using the mobile phone. Who would have thought, right? So I think that the diversity of the use cases as well as ability to go after markets that are not in North America was another very interesting thing for me in this competition.
Susie, you touched on this a little earlier about why it's important to have events like this and make these kind of investments. You know, I know you recently wrote a piece on our on the Qualcomm blog, the OnQ blog, that talked about STEM in investment and improving that, you know, pipeline for female founders and female improving that pipeline for female investors and female founders and female technology leaders. You know, talk a little bit about why that's important and why it's important to kind of work on these things across those age groups you were saying.
Right. That's a really good question, and it's really critical because the needle is not going to move by itself, right? Despite all good intentions, you have to have actual tangible programs, female founders events, STEM programs, support, you know, hiring support of diverse.
Otherwise, it'll take 208 years.
Otherwise, it'll take exactly, and we're gonna try to get that down so we can all see it. For example, the Thinkabit Lab is one of the things that we are very involved in, and I am very involved in here. And it's not actually an education program. It's actually a STEM engagement program, a STEM or a STEAM engagement program. So we can show kids who will, and students of all ages, frankly, who don't necessarily see themselves as inventors or going into math, science, technology, and engineering, that these careers... And it has a very strong career focus to it as well, as a making focus, that these careers can be interesting, challenging, fun, and they could be for them, not just somebody whose, you know, parents are engineers or somebody who has traditionally gone into these areas.
And so what kind of people participate in the Thinkabit Lab?
The Thinkabit Lab started out with sixth grade girls. And then, you know, middle school boys as well in the local community. And we have opened a big hub out in the Washington, D.C. area with Virginia Tech and one in Detroit, downtown Detroit, Michigan, and probably about 10 to 12 other sites within schools. There's a lot of demand. There's a lot of demand for these kinds of tangible experiences to get people engaged. Because if you think about it, you can look at the pipeline from kind of looking at it backwards as well. To have people like, Sarah and female founders or Susies in these areas, you have to have them go through, the university programs for building scientists and engineers. And to get them interested in university programs, they have to be interested in that curriculum in high school and grammar school as well. So there's so many wonderful STEM opportunities out there, but you really have to get kids who don't necessarily think of themselves in these areas, and that applies to a lot of girls. You have to get them interested.
Maybe we can take a little bit of time talking about any ways that, I guess the thing about the three of you here who are involved in the tech industry and how you got into that pipeline. What were the things that got you involved in technology and these types of industries?
If we think of it the way that Susie's been talking about it, I started my interest in STEM very, very early. And in high school, I remember an amazing math teacher that really helped me believe that I could do whatever I wanted in math. And I thought math was just this beautiful, wonderful subject. And I ended up going to university and majoring in math. And I didn't end up after that actually going into mathematics. But I think that being able to think like a mathematician made me courageous enough that I could think in any way that I needed to think. If I could solve math problems, I could solve any other sort of problems. And so when I ended up going into startups as software startups, yeah, I did some coding, but I mean, I never really was an engineer. I was always more on the business side who could understand engineers. I just loved it. And I've been doing that ever since.
Varsha, how about yourself?
I grew up in a family of judges. My father is a judge. So the natural tendency was I'll be a lawyer once I get there. So never paid attention to sciences till 10th grade. And 10th grade figured out, okay, math can be done. Biology was hard. And physics resembles math. So it was easier to do. And so was able to get good enough marks to get admission into engineering and law school. And I said, you know what? Law school is long. I'm going to take the short way out.
Well, thank you for not becoming a lawyer. We can all agree on that.
So it was 4 years undergrad and, you can get a job. So it was easy choice for a lazy person like me.
I hardly think you're a lazy person. For me, similar to probably both of you, is I was very interested in actually biology. I was going to be a veterinarian when I was in high school, and then I toured the Primate Research Center at UC Davis and realized I could not deal with the pain and suffering of a medical field, and so I ended up going to college without really knowing what I was going to do. And in those days, which was a while ago, they didn't have computers in high school, certainly. And I took my first Fortran programming class, and it was kind of like math, and it was a puzzle, and it was a logic puzzle, and I fell in love with it. And a little while later, I realized, oh, I can make a really good living at this. And so that's my story. I do want to also mention, one of the most creative people I know is a young woman I used to work with here at Qualcomm. She's off getting a PhD at Berkeley. She and other people have pointed out to me, you don't necessarily need, it's kind of a myth we tell ourselves that you need to love math or be good in math or be good in this or that, from the age of kindergarten or something. She said, I hated math. And she's very successful in computer science and very creative. And so I think we also have to be very careful that we don't promote this notion that, to have these kinds of STEM careers, that you need to be interested in those careers, but the field is so broad. I mean, look at Sarah, the mathematician, and now she's, founding companies doing, English learning classes. And so I think that's a trap that we have to be very careful that we don't, even with all these good STEM engagement programs, that we don't fall into, because there's not one path. And you just heard three very different paths here.
Yes, absolutely. That's good to hear, because I do hate math.
Yes.
So but you, I have some hope here.
We can train you.
Okay. So for Qualcomm Ventures, what's next in this area? What are the other kinds of events that you're going to do like this? What are some of the things that you're going to consider to kind of continue the momentum here?
I think we're going to try and do this well and continue to do it. I think that's our commitment. This was our first adventure and Marianne's brainchild to get it out to market. We've had great success with this event. So we are going to try and continue this every year going forward. I think that will give us give a great platform for entrepreneurs on an ongoing basis rather than just one time this year. And we'll continue to foster these relationships, and we look forward to that.
Okay, so this will be an annual event.
That's right.
With that 10 new companies or whatever the final number ends up being. And we'll see who ends up with the big check.
That's right. And we want to see more people like Sarah out in our network. So,
well, Sarah, as far as Blue Canoe is concerned, what's next for you?
Oh, well, a few different things. I mean, we are already putting some of our new funding to use, and we're growing both our development team and our sales team so that we can continue to grow. And I certainly am benefiting, and the whole company is benefiting from Varsha's advice and amazing introductions. And that's just beginning in terms of all of the help. And so hopefully you'll all continue to hear from us as we grow and we're able to improve the lives of more and more people.
Well, I'm sure we will. Susie, how about yourself?
And I'm looking for that Italian class, but I could probably actually use it in English too. So who knew that, you know, a simple engineer was doing a podcast?
Well, this is the Qualcomm podcast. We get a lot of engineers
okay,
on our
yeah,
podcast.
Okay, good, good, good. So I think going forward, I very much hope to be involved as well. It was quite an honor when Marianne said, you know, will you work with us on this? You should not put me in charge of the money because I'll give it away to everybody. but I think it's, seriously speaking, I think it's really critical that not only do we engage people with our STEM programs and such, but I think it's really critical that we support innovation in using these ecosystems and these platforms that Qualcomm makes. Because if we don't have those innovative companies using these technologies and products, then what's the point of inventing them?
Well, thank you, everyone, for participating. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Varsha. Thank you, Susie, for coming on the Qualcomm podcast. And we're looking forward to seeing all the great things that will come out of both Qualcomm Ventures and Blue Canoe. And again, thank you for participating.
Thank you for hosting.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Qualcomm podcast. And if you haven't already subscribed to our podcast, you can do so via SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Oh, and by the way, my friends in legal really want you to know that Qualcomm Snapdragon is a product of Qualcomm Technologies Incorporated.